Sheer Factor by Gary Davidson, an audiobook read by a guy doing an impression of Rusty the Rooster from The Friendly Giant. Chapter 3. That was now. This is then. 2003, mostly.
The rise of his political career had been quick for Andy, and Jill was a major part of that. Before they'd met, Andy had been working on the edge of politics, only mildly becoming active in the Conservative Party during his earliest days at the University of Ottawa. And that was mostly a rebellion against his unionist mother. And he had learned a lot while working on Preston Manning's failed campaign to lead the Canadian Alliance, and more while working on the Unite the Right campaign that led to the reverse takeover of the old Progressive Conservative Party by the regressive and poorly organized Canadian Alliance. And somehow, he managed to get work in the correspondence department at the office of the leader of the opposition under Stockwell Day. On his own, Andy had been heading towards civic politics, a real grassroots, the actual level of government that affected everyone every day. It's why he worked on Ottawa City Councillor Karen Howard's Youth Advisory Committee, and why he ran as a school trustee for the Ottawa Carleton Catholic School Board in his third year of university. And while that defeat was crushing, he may never have met Jill if he hadn't lost to incumbent Kathy Ablett. "You should run for Parliament," Jill suggested when they were first dating. "How? I'm nobody. I haven't won anything. I have no political experience." Andy shrugged. "Who would elect me here?" "Not here," Jill said. "Come home with me and run there." "I should finish my degree first." Education was important. "It's a B.A. You can finish it at the University of Regina," Jill insisted. "We can finally get married. My family can help you get a job. I've got a cousin who does real estate and old family friends in insurance. We could have a house." Insurance? And he didn't want to be an insurance agent. "Just to get started," Jill insisted. "Party machine here is tight. You'll never be considered in Ottawa. But my MP is an NDPer who's like 100 years old. His popularity's been dropping for years. He's going to lose, and he's going to lose to a conservative. But I'm nobody in Regina." Andy couldn't wrap his head around this. Someone from outside Ottawa could never become a candidate here. You'd have to put in years of work to even be considered. "You're not thinking strategically. You're nobody here, but in Regina you'll be my husband, and my roots show all over the place out there." He finally agreed to go with her, to check things out at least. The professors at the University of Regina were good, but not to the level he'd been facing at University of Ottawa. One of her uncles nudged him that they weren't that tough either. "My cousin Johnny's got a short-term memory gap that gets him outsmarted by gophers on weekends, and he picked up a 3.4 from U of R." The real kicker was Dave, the local conservative riding president. They wanted young blood for a candidate, someone who would appeal to all the new folk and the new developments. But everyone who could run was either retired or hip-deep in businesses they simply couldn't get enough time away from to do the husking. "Not that we know much about that out here," Dave said. "I do," said Andy. "I worked for Preston and Stockwell back in Ottawa." "Shoot," Dave said. "You're a Verderan, then." In deference to the old man, Andy didn't correct him on his mispronunciation. "Maybe that's just how they speak out here." "We got a guy here who's ripe for defeat," Dave continued. "A real socialist and the longest-serving MP in the country's history. I won't say his ideas are out of date, but look at the cars around here now and tell me if this still looks like an outhouse party line farm community to you." It wasn't. The riding was mostly suburbs, young families, people with median income jobs and modest budgets. They'd all grown up in a province with socialist policies and were the product of that, meaning they were soft. But as Stockwell kept saying, they were ripe for the picking, too. They'd likely respond very positively to the idea of a young party wanting to form a government that put the needs of the rural folk ahead of the big city elites, particularly one that promised to put more money in the pockets of people who would believe them when they said they had delivered on those promises, rather than voters who would actually check to see that they had, in fact, done the opposite more times than not. "If you's with Jill here, then you've got nearly a third of the party in this place already behind you. I doubt it would take much for an old party hand like yourself to get in everyone's mouth." And he didn't know what that meant. Not literally. But he looked at the polling information they had, and thanks to his time under Preston and Stockwell, he knew how to read it. It wasn't a foregone conclusion or anything, but from what he saw, the chances were pretty good a conservative was going to win this riding in one of the next two elections. He could come out here, finish his degree at this university, probably even part-time, while he worked and got his campaign ready. To think, he could be a professional politician by the time he was 25. Unbelievable. "Can you shoot?" Dave asked. "Huh? Andy blanched? There wasn't any need for guns in Ottawa." "I'll get Reggie to take him out," Jill proffered. "If anyone can show him how to shoot right, it'll be Reggie." What do I need a gun for?" And he didn't like guns much. His mother had put that into him. Out here, boy? You either need a rusty pickup, a farmer's tan, or a hunting rifle to get accepted. Dave turned from him. Otherwise, you might as well go back east. Jill was on his arm. You'll love it, Andy. It's a sport, and you like those. He didn't really. It was another of those things he got interested in just to make friends, to fit in, because it was an easy way to relate to people. His father was a book person. Despite being half American, he wasn't into sports. His mother had seen too many injuries in the ER to even let him play extracurricular sports, which was fine by Andy. As with most things, most of the time, Andy wasn't a doer. He preferred to watch. So with a fair bit of anxiety and a lot of reluctance, Andy agreed to go hunting with Reggie, who had brought Doug and Tom and some Middle Eastern guy named Iqbal or Ishmael or Lickballs, as the boys called him. Being out in the prairie grasslands on an early fall morning with a bunch of armed strangers made Andy feel weird, and seeing the overly tanned face of Iqbal with a shotgun made him feel nervous. But once Reggie had taken him through the basics of shooting the rifle, and Andy got off a few shots at the ducks in the pond, he felt something he'd never felt before. Elation from participating in a sporting activity. And with that came a sense of fitting in. For a nerd like Andy, who had spent way too much time in the basement of his parents' townhouse memorizing Simpsons cartoons, this was heady stuff, and Andy finally understood the appeal of drugs. "You like sports?" Reggie asked. "Sure," Andy offered. "I love the Rough Riders." The rest of the group cheered, and then Andy realized they probably meant the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, not the Ottawa Rough Riders that he'd grown up with. "Yeah," Andy joined in. He wasn't going to ruin this now by becoming an outsider. His team was red, theirs was green. "Go green," he yelled. Andy was a team player, at least once he knew what team he needed to be on.